It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 37. This week we're going to China and Australia and Greece and the UK and Europe and Africa and Ireland and the US. So we've got a lot to do. And just for those of you who are new listeners, you'll hear me say things or talk about something. Often I'll just mention it in the passing and you'll say, well, is that true? Where did you get that? Well, if you go to the blog, you'll find that usually I have a link to articles which provide the evidence for what we are saying. Also, a word of apology. I have my grandchildren from Australia staying with me just now, and you may hear occasional sounds from them. But let's get on with it because, as I say, there's a lot to carry, and let's begin with elections.
אני נרגש מאוד בלילה הזה. זה לילה של ניצחון אדיר, אדיר.
So it looks as though Benjamin Netanyahu has done it. The magician, as he's called, has done it. He has managed, despite the corruption charges against him and various other things, to stay in office for a record fifth term after Benny Gantz admitted defeat on Wednesday in the Israeli election. Both parties are neck and neck, both men are neck and neck, but what is significant is the left wing and the Arab parties have seen a significant drop, whereas the right wing and the Orthodox religious parties have increased. So it looks as though Mr. Netanyahu is going to have a 65-seat majority in the 120-seat Knesset, and that is significant. I think for many people it's actually unexpected. Secondly, we know that at the time of recording, as I'm recording this, India is going to vote. It is the largest election ever in the history of the world, largest democratic election, 900 million voters. And then thirdly, we note that Australia are going to have an election at the beginning of May. Speaking of which, I was quite amused to find that there was the oldest woman in Australia is a Scottish woman, comes from Glasgow, and she's just celebrated her 110th birthday in Melbourne. Her name is Nancy Glucken, and she was joined by relatives, including her younger sister. Say she celebrated with a large birthday cake and a piper dressed in a kilt, and received cards from the Queen and the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. I love the fact that she said, she told local media that the secret to her long life was, don't let anything bother you, eat chocolate and drink whiskey. But let's stick with Australia, with news, of course, that reflects, Australia reflects what's going on in Europe and in America as well. But this one was a new one on me. Vegan attacks on Australian farms. There have been a number of attacks by radical activists on farms and on abattoirs and so on. There's been an online map published that highlights farm locations and encourages extremists to take the law into their own hands. And sometimes there have been groups all dressed in black of up to 100 people invading the farm. Now, as someone who grew up on a farm, to me, this is appalling. The tactics are simple. They want to bully, they want to threaten, they want to intimidate. But they really, they're such extremists. There are groups who oppose aquariums. They also oppose the ownership of domestic pets, including guide dogs for the blind. They are hardline extremists who are being encouraged. It's a fascinating development. But meanwhile, also in Australia, here's a story that's ongoing with Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, can you believe this, have banned a conference on Christian persecution. Now, it's a conference entitled Religious Freedom at the Crossroads, the Rise of Anti-Christian Sentiment in the West. It's a legal conference to be held in Sheridan College in Perth, Western Australia, in June. And Facebook believes that any material relating to that conference violate its community standards. I mean, it's breathtaking. The list of speakers are some of the finest legal minds in Australia. It is going... The conference proceedings are going to be published in the Western Australian Jurist Law Journal, which is a peer-reviewed academic publication. And yet Facebook have said, ironically proving the premise of the conference, that it's not suitable for their community material. But sticking with Australia, I guess Facebook have no problem with something far worse. Married at First Sight is now the most popular television program in Australia.
You have no balls.
Have a listen to this.
You're single for a reason.
Yeah.
You're single
and
for
you're
a reason.
And you're getting paid for a reason. And you know what? It won't be too long till she leaves you too. I'm getting up.
Michael has no balls when it comes to Martha.
I'm going to pour my drink on her.
I'm just saying, I'm asking nicely.
Well, it is breathtaking. It's on Channel 9. It is the most popular program, so doubtless it's going to continue. But I love what ABC TV's News Breakfast co-host Michael Rowland says about this. This is a show that destroys relationships. It doesn't celebrate relationships. This is a show that encourages cheating and adultery. What sort of message is this show setting to teenagers like mine, who I'm trying to teach about the nature of stable, loving relationships? It's the absolute cesspit of TV. So there you have it. In a civilized Western country, you have animal activists attacking farms. You have a Christian conference on persecution being banned by Facebook. And you have the most popular television program being what another newscaster calls it, the absolute cesspit of TV. Let's shift from Australia to China, where there are again some extraordinary stories. Now, one that's largely gone unreported is a report by David Alton, the Liberal peer in the House of Lords, Lord Alton, who have issued... He and his group have issued a report on the harvesting of organs, of body organs, in China. Now, what they've done is they've looked at official statistics on the number of transplant operations conducted in China, the time frame, the duration the patient has to wait for an organ, and so on. And they've come to the conclusion that the organ industry is a lucrative one in China, and the Chinese government... claim to have these organs legitimately supplied from judicially sentenced executed prisoners and volunteers. But this group think they can prove that it's prisoners of conscience, particular the Falun Gong spiritual movement, the Uyghur Muslims, the Tibetan Buddhists, and possibly even Christians who are being included in this. Now, this is a huge story, and I'll be fascinated to see what our oh-so-self-righteous governments who are concerned about human rights are actually prepared to do about this. I look forward to statements from the Scottish Parliament, who can manage to make 53 statements about Israel. Nothing about this. I look forward to statements from the United Kingdom government, the Australian government, and the American government. And I suspect it's the American government who'll be the ones who are most likely to stand against this practice. And staying with China, the Chinese government is offering cash rewards to people who inform on underground churches. One city is offering more than £1,000 to those who can identify unofficial places of worship. There is a Zhu Xianghong, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is the head of a national committee for government-approved Protestant churches. And he's claimed that China, Western forces seek to upset our country's social stability or even overthrow our government through Christianity. And they've started offering cash rewards, starting from around £11 for or 100 yuan for useful information. but helping to identify and arrest preachers and members of religious groups will be rewarded as much as 10,000 yuan. That's about 2 months' average salary. Again, I look forward to our government making representation, as if. But the word of God will not be contained, and this past week, 100 years of the Chinese Union version of the Bible was celebrated. Our good friend Elaine Duncan, the chief executive of the Scottish Bible Society, was over there and celebrating what has been an incredible success. So since 1987, 80 million copies of this Bible have been sold in China. The Word of God will always bring forth fruit. Let's move to Europe, where sadly in Greece, fertility doctors in Greece and Spain say they have produced a baby from three people in order to overcome a woman's infertility. The doctors say they're making medical history, which is undoubtedly true, but many other ethical experts seriously question whether this should have taken place. Because this three-person baby, when this was initially done, it was just to overcome a particular disease. But now we're being told that it's a woman's right, absolute right, to have a child from her own genetic material. But speaking of rights, we live in this perverse society where that gets done, and yet the right of the unborn child is continually attacked. And the British government, our international secretary, Penny Mordaunt. Now, bear in mind that Penny Mordaunt is seen to be a future leader of the Conservative Party. You're not some radical liberal leftist here. Well, is there any difference in our parties nowadays? I don't know. But she's the international development secretary, and she's boasted the UK has been a world leader in this area and will proudly continue to be one. Speaking at Canada House about the UK's relationship with Canada on gender equality, she said that Britain is going to give £42 million to look at the neglected issue of safe abortion in developing countries. That money will be given to Mary Stopes International and to the International Planned Parenthood Federation. Ms. Mordaunt criticised America obliquely. There are people around the world who want to control women, who want to restrict their choices and deny them their rights. Everyone should have control of their own bodies and their own futures. Apart from the intellectual just meaninglessness of that statement. It's just so frustrating to see my government being so patronizing and imperialistic towards primarily the Africans, because that's what this is about. We do indeed export abortion overseas. We're already the second biggest funder of family planning programs in the world, before Theresa May pledged a further 200 million. And yet, 65% of the public in the UK oppose the taxpayer giving money to be spent on abortions overseas. But nothing will stop the virtue signalling and the self-righteousness, even from the Conservatives. And of course, our government continues to push on in other areas. Listen to one item of news that pushed Brexit off the headline for just a wee while.
Thank you. Now, under our 50-year-old divorce laws in England and Wales, one partner has to accuse the other of adultery or unreasonable behaviour if they don't want to wait for their divorce, a wait that takes 2 years when they agree. One of the most famous divorce lawyers in the country is Baroness Fiona Shackleton. She's handled high-profile royal and celebrity divorces.
I think it's a step in the right direction. I think it's very important for people who do their own divorces, who are living in cramped accommodation, perhaps in one room, who have to trump up some sort of fault if they need to dissolve their marriage quickly. And in circumstances where...
Again, it's the crushing naivety of the statement that this is going to solve the problems of divorce. Well, I don't think it is at all. Of course there are difficulties with divorce, and actually divorce should be difficult. Marriage is a covenant commitment in which two people become one flesh. Two extended families come together, and often there are children, and that is the best environment in which children should be brought up. Something so valuable should be hard to end. But now it's easier to get out of a marriage than it is to get out of a mobile phone contract. In Scotland, you can already divorce after any reason for 1 year. I think maybe another thing actually is it's easier to get out of marriage than it's easier to get out of the European Union. In a strange kind of way, our society is showing what it values. Speaking of the European Union, this happened this week.
Mr. President, dear friends, tonight the European Council decided to grant the United Kingdom a flexible extension of the Article 50 period until the 31st of October. This means an additional 6 months for the UK. During this time, the course of action will be entirely in the UK's hands. It can still ratify the agreement.
This is like a never endem. It's just going on and on and on. And what is happening here is, again, it's very, very clear. For those of you listening from other countries, again, I'll explain it as simply as this. The British people voted to leave the European Union, having been given a referendum by the politicians who thought that we would not vote to do so. They then all promised they would enact the results of that referendum. What else could they do? But they've spent the past 3 years trying to prevent it happening. The European Union wants to prevent it happening, wants to make the divorce really, really hard. And so what we've got is we've got this situation where in the Houses of Parliament, we have a Conservative leader who really wants to stay in the European Union, but a majority of our MPs and party don't. And we have a Labour leader who really wants to leave the European Union, but the majority of his MPs and party don't want to leave. And so they've created this perpetual stalemate, which means now the European Union have said, okay, you can have till October to decide. One suspects that we'll just have 6 months more of what we've just had of nothing. Those who want a second referendum, which really means they want to stop Brexit because they believe that people would now vote against, although that's not guaranteed. I think it's likely, but not guaranteed. They'll keep to push for that. Those who want to leave cleanly or completely, they'll continue to push for that. Theresa May will continue to push for hers. And meanwhile, Britain has become the laughingstock of the world. Let's change subject and let's move to Northern Ireland, where Union Theological College is the largest theological training body in Northern Ireland. For many years, I think since 1926, it's been connected to Queen's University. But it has now been removed from Queen's University. And there are various reasons being given, but let me just put it very straightforwardly. And again, please go and look at an article I've written on my blog about this. The Presbyterian Church of Ireland has somewhat unusually, as a mainstream denomination, become more conservative and more biblical over the past few years. As a result, they've stood up against the pressure to endorse same-sex marriage and other issues like that. As a result, Queen's have basically said, we want to get rid of their college. They say that this is a college that's largely based on Protestant evangelical teaching with little input from other perspectives. There's a lack of diversity in the teaching provision and staff. Interesting, isn't it? I wonder how many Calvinists, I wonder how many evangelical Christians, and I wonder how a different perspective in that sense would be permitted in Queen's, in history, in English, in literature, in sociology. I suspect not at all, and I suspect if you brought that perspective in, you'd be banned. This is typical. They argue for diversity and inclusion, and instead they want to make sure everyone is of one mind and those who are not are excluded. In that regard, there's a fascinating article in Quillette from a guy called Nick Wilson talking about the University of Washington's secondary teacher training program, about how he went on it for a year and how it was little more than indoctrination or a training in how to indoctrinate young people. Just let me read part of it. Most of the classes at the UW, University of Washington, require little if any academic work, and they often resemble group therapy sessions along with activities like personal journaling, which I tried to undertake with an open mind, despite my sense that these tasks are far removed from the vocational demands of teaching. STEP is a travesty in its disservice to its own students, and because the program neglects the practice of teaching in favor of pontifications on social justice, it lets down the disadvantaged children it purports to serve. You know, when I go back to the Brexit debate, people say, oh, those who are more educated. So that 96% of young people in Ireland who've been to university are very pro-EU. And they say, isn't this a wonderful thing? We're all of one mind. Yeah, but that's not a wonderful thing. And that shows you what education has become in our culture. It has become indoctrination. Robin Aitken, whose book The Noble Liar I've mentioned, and I'm going to mention several times because it is absolutely my book of the year, shows that in that book that people with more education are less likely to change their beliefs. In other words, the more you're educated within our Western education system, the less likely you are to think. And that's how we end up with all this transgender nonsense. So in this week's news, Joan McAlpine, a Scottish Member of Parliament, is in huge trouble. She's the chair of the Culture, Tourism, Europe and External Affairs Committee. And as such, she suggested that for the next census in 2021, the question on gender should remain a binary one. And boy, the abuse that she has received because of that. I have a link to an article from The Spectator, where it looks at parents who are in revolt, or rather that's from the Times, parents are in revolt about the trans program in their schools and the material that's being produced there, and also an article from The Spectator which talks about how the woman who wrote that article is being under considerable attack, and politicians joining in. And it really is politicians who... I don't know why, but I think they're just trying to prove how nice they are, who are pushing this more than anyone. I mean, you understand what's going on here. This 50-page trans toolkit for schools includes a section on breast binding, saying things like, it may be that pupils wash their binders every night at home, and this will need to be considered on a residential trip. This is what our teachers are being told to do. This is where our politicians are going. And those who speak up against this kind of thing, they find themselves in enormous trouble. So it's very rare, as Robin Aitken points out, for someone who is conservative in the sense of what we will call socially. I'm not talking politically here, but socially. In other words, generally, those of us who are biblical Christians will tend to hold to things like marriage and family, and we're not pro-abortion, etc. And it's very rare for them to be allowed on the BBC or in government. One such person is Roger Scruton. But he's now been sacked as head of a government housing body following comments about Islam, China and George Soros. Now, what did he say? He claimed Islamophobia was a propaganda word. Well, yes it is. I would claim that too. He's accused in these reports of saying each Chinese person is a kind of replica of the next one. Now, if he'd said that, that would be absolutely atrocious and it would be racist, but he didn't. What he said was the Chinese government is trying to create citizens who are automatons, who are exact replicas of the next one. And we see that in what they're doing in their social engineering. Actually, to be honest, I don't think the Scottish governments or the UK governments are too far away from that. But again, the Conservative government has got rid of him and the politicians are tweeting, oh, how wonderful it is that he's finally gone. The point is that people like him, and if you listen to any of Scruton's stuff or read it, it's brilliant, even if you don't agree with it. But to exclude his voice on the basis of this self-righteous, pompous virtue signalling is awful. The fact is that these people are pushing people towards a more far-right agenda if they will not allow those with a more reasonable point of view to express themselves or to have any say. Okay, just a couple of other things before we go. Listen to this old song.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
An evangelical Christian has put up an Instagram site about pastor's shoes because he noticed he sells or resells training shoes. And he noticed that there were pastors who seemed to have very expensive ones. For example, Pastor John Gray of Relentless Church in Greenville, South Carolina, was wearing Air Yeezy 2 Pure Platinum sneakers, costing $3,721. Or Seattle-based pastor Judah Smith wearing Gucci pants, his wife Chelsea wearing a Gucci tank top, listed at $980 and $490 respective. Or Steve Furtick, our old friend, wearing Jordan 1s, which sold for $968 in one auction. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with it. These people are paid from the Lord's people's tithes. And I just don't believe that pastors are meant to be rich. James warns us about those who think godliness is a way to make money.
You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing. And you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn.
I was asked to put on my own a picture, so I did. I think my £49 sneakers. I do like sneakers. They're very comfortable. Those are my shoes. Blame me if you want.
Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
Better go, but there's a fantastic article on cultural Marxism by Carl Truman, which I only have just time to recommend and strongly recommend you go for it. Please feel free to sponsor the podcast if you want. I'm very grateful to those of you this week who've joined on. It's great. We're now on to our second target. And I leave you with our quote of the week from The Noble Liar by Robin Aitken. Go sell your shoes and buy it is what I would say. So worth it. He says this, without an understanding of its guiding philosophy, he's talking about the media's guiding philosophy, we are in danger of being led blindfold into a way of thinking we have not freely chosen, but have merely absorbed. This podcast is here to help you think and to think things through biblically. God bless you and see you next week.
But it really looks like we